Before I actually get into the basic part of my message this morning, I want to say a couple of pretty harsh things. Maybe this is something I need to get my own heart right with the Lord on. But I get pretty ticked off at husbands who take out their anger, their pride, their selfishness, their bullying, their abuse on their wives and their kids, but especially their wives. You see, God invented marriage. It was His idea. He's the one who dreamed up this whole thing. And to me, marriage is an absolutely fantastic deal to get involved in. And I really can't believe that God would invent such a marvelous thing, such a beautiful thing as marriage, and then let anybody, especially a husband, get away with abusing it. I just don't think He's going to do that. And if you're here and you're abusing it, you know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to you. I want you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Beginning with verse 6, and just we'll finish that paragraph. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And here's what it says. Therefore, we are always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. We live by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. I'm not sure how many of us here this morning can identify with Paul on that one. We really do love life here on this earth. But anyway, that's kind of at this point in his life, anyway, the way he felt. But look at verse 9. So we make it our goal to please Him. We make it our goal to please Him. And the reason he says that is because what he says next. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one of us may receive what is due him for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. And I believe very much that that encompasses our marriages. As I said, this is God's invention. It's His idea. He dreamed it up. He's plugged stuff into it. There's all kinds of things said in the Scripture about how to make this thing work that he has invented. And, Jim, is there something I can do about this? Just stick them up my nose? Okay. I don't know. This has not happened to me for a long, long time.
Lay hands on the chair and we'll pray for you. The elders of the church.
Then one blows into my coffee. Okay, that won't bother me if it doesn't bother you guys. So, I'm probably only talking to a handful of guys here on this, but from the standpoint of a husband, for him to exercise extreme selfishness in his relationship with his wife. In other words, he always gets his way. There's no room for negotiation as to what she wants to do versus what he wants to do. That's what I would describe as selfishness. Bullying her. Being the big macho guy. This is what we're going to do. If you don't like it, lump it. Anger, letting anger turn into a real conflict situation where there is actually fear involved on the part of the wife. And, of course, pride covers a multitude of things. And physical abuse, there's just absolutely no place for that, in my opinion, in a marriage relationship. So anyway, just that word. But what we really want to get at this morning is husbands loving your wives. How do we do that? Let's take a look at Ephesians chapter 5. This is, as I mentioned the other day, the great chapter, the last half of the chapter anyway, on the subject of marriage, and it's got a lot to say to us husbands as well as to wives. Now, we could start with verse 22. We could actually start with verse 21, but we won't. That'll have to be for another time. So let's start with verse 25. And there's three verses I want to point out to you here. Verse 25, verse 28, and verse 32. 25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word. Verse 28, in this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. Verse 32, this is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself. Three times in this short 11 verses, God commands, and I use that word carefully because the way the Greek is put together here, it is a command in every situation, all three of them, commands us to love our wives. So, you know, really, if you want to boil it down to a simple equation, are we going to be in obedience to that or not? But the first one, to me, is the most significant. In verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loves the church. And, of course, the question we ask is, well, how did Christ love the church? In a way that we can emulate that. As I've looked through the scriptures, and I find the expression verbally of God's love toward mankind, Christ's love toward the church, all the way from Genesis to Revelation, wherever you find that expressed in the scriptures, God's love toward us, toward the church, toward mankind, it is always expressed in terms of actions. God's love is always expressed to us in the scripture in terms of actions. He always does something about his love. He never just stops with saying, I love you, and lets it go at that. He does something. He takes action. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish and have everlasting life. Romans 5:8, but God extended or commended his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So every time you find God's love expressed in the Scripture toward us, he always does something about his love. Well, that would be a clue to us in terms of how I as a husband, you as a husband, should love our wives as Christ loved the church. We put shoe leather to it. See, love is a lot more than just a feeling. It is that, but it's a lot more than that. Love is really a decision. See, God made a decision that he loved us so much that he was going to give his son to die for us. That was a decision he had to make. Well, same with us. We make a decision to do something loving for our wives. I have guys from time to time come to me and say, I just don't love her anymore. And so we talk about it a while, and finally, I get around and ask them this question. Well, when was the last time you did something loving for them? Where you performed an act of love that by your actions, not by what you said, but by your actions, you were expressing love to her. When was the last time you did that? Well, most of the time they get this very pious look on their face and look like they're thinking, but they really know the answer right off the bat. It's been months since they've done anything loving. You see, you don't feel your way into acting. You act your way into feeling. Love is more than a feeling. Love is a decision. You don't feel your way into acting loving. You act loving and the feelings come trailing along. Several years ago, my office was still over here in the admin building, And it was a Friday night, and I was heading home, and man, it had been a rough week. And I hadn't gotten stuff accomplished like I'd hoped I would that week. I like closure on stuff. And it was Friday night, and there were a bunch of things still on my desk that were still dangling. A couple of personnel decisions and some other stuff. And so as I walked out the door, heading for my car in the parking lot, I thought, man, this has been a lousy week. And I had really, that afternoon, developed what we call it in our house, a DRA, a dirty, rotten attitude. And Carol and I, it was one of the few weekends that we were going to have home alone together. And so I didn't want to go home with a DRA because I knew it'd put a damper not only on Friday night, but possibly on the whole weekend. And so as I climbed in the car, I tried to change my whole attitude by pulling me mentally up by my own bootstraps. You ever try that? Make it work? Well, I didn't either. So as I pulled out of the parking lot, I just shot up a word of prayer. I said, Lord, help me. I don't want to go home feeling like this. Give me an idea. Almost instantaneously, an idea popped into my mind. It was such a good one, I knew it had to be right straight from the portals of heaven. So what the idea was, stop at the Hallmark store on the way home at the Mall of the Bluffs and get Carol a little gift. I thought that was sensational. The only problem was, it was early November. Her birthday was past. Our anniversary was past. Thanksgiving was, you know, still down the road about 3 weeks. Christmas wasn't even close yet. So there was no occasion to get her a gift. But just get her a gift. So I did. I, 5 minutes or 10 minutes away over on the other side of town near our house, I pulled into the parking lot of the Mall of Bluffs and walked into the Hallmark store and began looking around. And I didn't want to spend a lot of money, but I wanted to get something I knew she'd really like. So I looked and looked and looked, and the longer I stayed there and was fulfilling my mission to find a little love token for Carol, the more excited I got, the more the DRA began to fade, and finally I found just the right thing. It was three red candles, each about 3 inches in diameter, each a different height, and a little piece of green fuzz around the bottom. It was a centerpiece for Christmas. And I knew she'd love it. She really goes for it. Yeah, it's romantic. I mean, she loves stuff like that. And so I had him put it in a box, gift wrap it. I got a card to go with it, and I walked back out of the store. By the time I got to the car, I could hardly even sense the DRA. It was almost totally gone. By the time I got home, 5 minutes later, pulled in the garage, it was gone. I was so excited about walking in the house and giving Carol this little love token. And I did, and man, she... Carol, I mean, she threw her arms around me, gave me a hug and a kiss, and we had a great weekend together. Next time you get a DRA, for no particular reason necessarily, try it. You see, I did an act of love, and the feelings changed. They came trailing along. So love is a lot more than just feelings. It's a decision that we make. I think the best story I have ever come across on this, to really illustrate for you what I'm talking about. Let me read you this, if I haven't lost it. Here it is. Cut this out of the Reader's Digest some time ago. This is a story of a businessman and what he learned about how to really love his wife. He said, I made a vow to myself on the drive down to the vacation beach cottage. For 2 weeks, I would try to be a loving husband and father. Totally loving. No ifs, ands, or buts. The idea had come to me as I was listening to a commentator on my car's tape player. He was quoting a biblical passage about husbands being thoughtful to their wives. Then he went on to say, love is an act of the will. A person can choose to love. To myself, I had to admit that I had been a selfish husband, that our love had been dulled by my own insensitivity. In petty ways, really, chiding Evelyn for her tardiness, insisting on the TV channel that I wanted to watch, throwing out day-old newspapers that I knew Evelyn still wanted to read. Well, for 2 weeks, all that was going to change. And it did. Right from the moment I kissed Evelyn at the door and said, "Wow, that new yellow sweater looks great on you." "Oh, Tom, you noticed," she said, surprised and pleased, maybe a little perplexed. After the long drive down, I wanted to sit and read. Evelyn suggested a walk on the beach. I started to refuse, and then I thought, hey, Evelyn's been alone here with the kids all week, and now she wants to be alone with me. So we walked on the beach while the kids flew their kites. So it went, 2 weeks. Not calling a Wall Street investment firm where I was a director, but a visit to the Shell Museum, though I usually hate museums, and I enjoyed it. Holding my tongue while Evelyn's getting ready made us late for a dinner date. Relaxed and happy. That's how the whole vacation went. I made a new vow to keep on remembering to choose love. Love is a choice. Love is a decision. That's what he was learning here. There was one thing that went wrong with my experiment, however. Evelyn and I still laugh about it today. On the last night at our cottage, preparing for bed, Evelyn stared at me with the saddest expression on her face. "What's the matter?" I asked her. "Tom," she said in a voice filled with distress, "do you know something I don't?" "What do you mean?" "Well, that checkup I had several weeks ago, our doctor, did he tell you something about me? Tom, you've been so good to me. Am I dying?" It took a moment for it all to sink in, and then I burst out laughing. "No, honey," I said, wrapping my arms around her. "You're not dying. I'm just beginning to live." Huh. That's what the Ephesians 5:25 is talking about. That's the kind of love Christ has for us. It's love in action. It's love that makes a decision to do something for the person to whom the love is extended. Simple little thing, and yet so meaningful. Am I dying? Oh, man. But, you know, how can we, us guys here in this room, how can we make a stab at doing something like that? Well, let me suggest three things that we can do. Every day, okay? As a husband, I aim to do these three things every day. Not once a week, not once a month, but every day. First of all, tell her I love her. Say those three little words that leaves her dancing on air and gasping for breath. Go hang yourself. No, I don't mean that. That would leave her dancing on air and gasping for breath. I love you. It is absolutely amazing to me sometimes when I run into husbands who rarely, if ever, say those three words. It's just not part of their vocabulary for some reason or other. They have no idea what how much it means to their wives. And so they just, you know, they kind of, I don't think they would actually say this out loud, but their attitude is sort of like, look, I told her I loved her when I married her. When I changed my mind, I'll let her know. Terrible. We need to learn to express this. Now, it's my guess that your wives in this particular area are wired together pretty much the same way my wife is. And I know that it is important to Carol that I tell her this every day. And I work at it. I may miss a day here or there, but I work at it. I've already done it today. How many of you guys have done this today? Let me see your hands. Well, you're at a marriage seminar. I guess that's the reason. How about Tuesday, huh? Last Tuesday, yeah, right. Yes.
Something that I do getting ready for church, something that God expects me, and we've got to be able to remind him of how beautiful he is.
Okay. Okay, good deal. Look at what is number two. Do something nice for her. Look at what is number three. Pay her a compliment. That's what he's talking about. Parent, you look so beautiful. That's not hard to say. But let's stick with do something nice for her. Now, I'm talking about every day, guys. I mean, words are cheap. I love you. That's done. It's over. But doing something nice for her every day, that takes a little thought and creativity and a little bit of genius to come up with something every day. But really, guys, I'm not talking about big deals here or expensive things. How many of you guys, for instance, have a honey-do list? You know, honey, would you please do this? Honey, would you please do that? We all do. It's either up here in our heads or it's written down on a piece of paper at home. Well, how many of you are all caught up on them right now? No. That's impossible, huh? I'm all caught up right now. So it is not impossible. Yeah. I couldn't say that last week, but I... So that's the thing. I learned the hard way how important that is to Carol, because she is totally not mechanical in any way, shape, or form. And, well, it's the responsibility to get it done, whether you're mechanical or not. There are certain things she wants done that I can't do either, but I have the responsibility to try and work it out so that we do get it done. But anyway, I'm talking about simple things like that. I'm talking about creative things, that things that we just, because we love her, we give some thought and work to this. We come up with ideas that are creative and innovative and fun. One time I'd accepted a speaking engagement back in the Midwest in a church service on a Sunday morning. And I ordinarily don't do that, but I did because of the nature of the situation and the church it was, and I had a close relationship with them. Well, much to my amazement, 3 or 4 weeks before I was to leave on this trip, I looked at my date book and realized that it was that Sunday, was July the 25th, and that was Carol's birthday. I'd really blown it, because usually I wouldn't take anything on her birthday or our anniversary or something like that. So I tried to apologize to her, and, she was very understanding. And then I began to think, okay, what can I do to make up for this? I got to come up with something really ingenious, other than just a gift and a card, which I was going to do. But my creative juices were at a very low ebb, and I just couldn't. It came right up to the day when I was going to leave, early Saturday morning on a flight out of Colorado Springs. And I was standing in front of the mirror, shaving, and I was still trying to think of something, even at that late date. And I glanced down at the counter, the Formica counter, and there was her eyebrow pencil laying there. So I picked it up, and I scribbled on the mirror, and then I took a piece of Kleenex to see if it'd come off easy, and it did. So after I finished and got dressed and everything, I took the eyebrow pencil, and I wrote on the mirror, "Happy birthday, I love you." And I stood back, and I looked at that, and I thought, man, that's a terrific idea. So we have a little soap dish sitting there on the Formica counter, and I lifted that up, and I wrote, "Happy birthday, I love you," and I set the soap dish down on top of it, knowing that sometime during the weekend she'd move that and find... Well, then I got carried away. On the glass shower door, "Happy birthday, I love you." Downstairs on the TV screen, "Happy birthday, I love you." On the oven door that was glass, "Happy birthday, I love you." And two or three other places around the house. I went and woke her up. She was going to take me to the airport, and she got up, very groggy, and got dressed, and we traipsed through the house to the garage. She didn't see any of it, and drove me to the airport, or I drove to the airport, and then she came back, and I had left a gift and a card for her that she was not supposed to open until Sunday. I got back Monday afternoon. She picked me up at the airport. She ran up to me, threw her arms around me, gave me a hug and a kiss, raved about the happy birthday, I love you. Didn't even say anything about the card or the gift. She did later, but I mean, it was such a simple little thing, and yet it meant so much to her. Now, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, doing something nice for her. And we've got to get our creative juices working to do that every day. I've talked to some guys, and they have shared with me some of the things they have done, and some of them are absolutely ingenious. Let me just tell you about one, that this was a lot of work. But a father and a son, in order to show their love and appreciation for the wife, mom, they got the idea to give her for Christmas, now this was a special occasion, but to give her for Christmas a medicine bottle filled with empty capsules, medicine capsules. You can buy them empty. And then in each capsule, 52 of them, one for each week of the year, they wrote out little notes on little thin pieces of paper of something that she could do that week. Go down and buy a new pair of cowboy boots on us. We'll take you to your favorite movie on Tuesday night of this week. You know, stuff like that. And they dreamed up 52 of these things. Put them in these little capsules, put the capsules in the bottle, and gave her that for Christmas. And the one with the cowboy boots was right on top because they knew that's what she wanted for Christmas. You know, most of us are not going to go to that extreme. But this is something that over the years, Carol and I have developed between us. She does the same thing to me. She works on these three things just as much as I do. And it's doing something. There's very few things in a marriage relationship where it's good to have competition between a husband and a wife. It's even a little risky on the golf course. Although if she's got a handicap and you got a handicap, that does even things out a little bit. But this is one, this doing something nice for her is one where competition can take place and you'll have nothing but fun at it. You do it to her, she does it to you. And we kind of have a little competition going. Can you top this? I mean, this is a good one. Can you top this? She's got the prize right now. I have not been able to come up with one to top this one. I got up one morning, I was leaving early on a trip, and groggily got out of bed, walked into the bathroom, lifted the stool lid to do my little chore here, and there floating in the water was a red rose. I cannot remember what happened to the rose. I don't think it got flushed down, though. And I have no idea, and she hasn't told me to this day, how or when she got it in there. But anyway, that's the type of thing, you know, fun deals that you can do. And what it says, it communicates, hey, I care, I love you. So doing something nice for it. And then, as Franklin here said, paying them a compliment. Boy, how important that is. Every day, paying them a compliment. And you know, it's so simple. The idea of this is, if you like it, say so. If you like it, say so. She comes in from the beauty parlor, you get home from work, she's there in all of her splendor and glory, spent your money, you know, to get this thing done, and you don't say anything? Huh? Well, you passed up a glorious opportunity to get a little investment back by keeping your mouth shut. But, you know, just, honey, your hair looks great. And then a hug. Man, that pays dividends. It communicates love. I care. Family life holds together on the thin thread of praise and commendation. Unhappily, we have a way of withholding expressions of appreciation and gratitude from those nearest to us. In Vermont, so the story runs, a tight-lipped husband finally said to his wife, "When I think of how much you have meant to me all these years, it is almost more than I can do sometimes to keep from telling you so." I hate to say it, but there are some guys like that. This little article that I clipped out of the paper years ago goes on to say that one of the deep regrets of Thomas Carlyle, a very well-known writer of both prose and poetry, his deep regret was his failure to tell his wife Jane how much he loved her and appreciated her constant loyalty and encouragement. Now let me emphasize that failure by reading you another brief statement about Carlyle. Thomas Carlyle was perceived as a tough, blunt, unfeeling man. But underneath that facade was a man who saw himself as affectionate and loving. He dearly loved his wife, but was never able to express that love to her convincingly. He simply traveled through his marriage, assuming she knew what was going on in his heart. His biographer says that when Carlyle's wife died, he became distraught. He became obsessed with trying to find out whether she knew how much he loved her. He found her diaries and started reading them, hoping he'd find comments about their relationship. He was horrified when he discovered she hadn't the slightest sense of his feeling for her. She died believing she was totally unloved. In fact, the only comments he did find about their relationship centered on her resentment of his temper. The discovery almost killed him, and he lived his life wishing his wife could return for just 5 minutes so he could pour out his love for her. And with that as a background, these are the words he wrote about that. What silences we keep year after year with those who are near to us and dear. Till out of sight and out of reach they go, these dear, familiar friends who loved us so. We think with vain regret of some kind word that once we might have said, and they have heard. But it's too late. They're gone. So every day I aim to pay her a compliment. So those three things. Tell her I love her, do something nice for her, pay her a compliment, all to express my love that goes beyond just words. Words are included, but it goes beyond words. Love is a decision that we make. Let me ask you a question, guys. Are you fun to live with? Are you fun to live with? Do you make life exciting around your house? Do you work at developing within the confines of your home an atmosphere of joy, of fun-loving, of tranquility? Is it kind of the atmosphere with your kids, for instance? Well, man, I wonder what Dad's going to pull next. Or the expectation of your wife of you coming up with some neat idea that's going to be fun for the two of you or maybe the whole family. See, that's a responsibility I feel we as husbands have. We of all people on earth, Christian husbands, we have a responsibility to set the tone and the atmosphere for our home. Not only for our own family, but for people who come into it. They will see, hey, man, this is a neat place to be. And it's our responsibility as husbands. In a little book called Building a Successful Marriage, this statement is made. One of the most important characteristics of a marriageable person is the habit of happiness. It would be impossible to overestimate the value of cultivating this trait in oneself and of seeking it in a marriage partner. Just the habit of happiness. Proverbs puts it, a cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a downcast spirit dries up the bones. Proverbs 17:22. So a cheerful heart. We need to work at developing that and maintaining it as much as... I know we all have hard times, and we get down, and that gives our spouse an opportunity to help cheer us up, and vice versa. with Carol and I, it's rare that we're both down at the same time. So we, you know, we trade off on that. But a cheerful heart. You know how to laugh. Is laughter a common thing in your home? You know, just a real good hee-haw. And also, do you know how to laugh at yourself? Because whether you realize it or not, you're a very funny person. At least your wife thinks you are. You do some dumb things at times. And I hope that we have created within our home an atmosphere of permissiveness where we can laugh together, sometimes laugh at one another, and enjoy those moments when we've just pulled some dumb stunt or said something that is really stupid. And we all do it. Let me ask you another question. By my actions, how would my wife list these six things that I'm going to show you in just a minute in order of priority in my life? Not what I tell her they are, but if she just watches me in action over a period of a week or so, how would she list these items in priority in my life? And I've got them all jumbled up. They're not in any order of priority here. Any ministry I may be involved in, my relationship to God, my job, my wife, my children, my favorite hobby or sport. It's somewhat appalling and amazing how many wives Carol talks to and they get into this area. And they will say, no question in my mind what's the top of my husband's priority list. Any discretionary time he has, he spends it right here on his favorite hobby or sport, hunting, golf, you know, whatever, water skiing, whatever it might be. He reads about it, he thinks about it, he talks about it, he gets with his buddies and does it. All to the neglect of some of these other things that are far more important. Now, what do you think, from a biblical point of view, ought to be number one? Huh? Number two? You all vote for that? Yeah. Okay. That's right. Number two should be number one. What should be number two? Number four, my wife, yeah. But guys, the question I'd really like you to face up to, is that the way it is with you? Are those really your first two top priorities in your life? Or is it something else there? Now, if you know and you recognize mentally that the top priority should be your relationship to God, that means if you're acting on that, you're going to spend time every day in the Word. You're going to spend a little time in prayer. You're going to fellowship with the Lord. You're going to get to know Him better because you want to develop that relationship. Well, the same thing's true with your wife. If she's supposed to be number two, then, see, they're both relationships. Your relationship with God, it's your relationship with your wife. That takes time. It takes listening. It takes communication. It takes asking questions. It takes getting involved. So the first two priorities, according to the Bible, you just told me, are relationships. Are we really working at that? Huh? Number three probably would be what? Our children? After that, biblically, it, you know, kind of fuzzes out a little bit, depending on the situation. But those first two, there's no question about it. So, my question was to ask your wife, say, honey, by my actions, how would you evaluate these six things in my life in terms of my priorities? I challenge you to do that. Write these down. Sometime on the way home or after you get home, say, hey, we talked about this in the meeting Sunday morning there. Be honest with me. Tell me what you think. It takes courage to do that, guys. Especially if you know, pretty well know in your own heart, you're out of line. Change is the name of the game in marriage. Huh? We may need to change it. We're still on the subject of husbands loving their wives. In a lot of little ways, every day, I need to communicate to my wife that next to God Himself, she is number one in my thoughts. Now, how do I do that? Well, supposing supper is at 6 o'clock at your house, about 2:30 in the afternoon, you realize, hey, you're not going to make it, you're going to have to get tied, you're tied up in something, it's going to be 6 or 6:15 before you get away from the office, maybe. What do you do? Huh? What do you do? Call her. Sure you do. That is, if you're thinking about her. And you call her, and it takes about 20 seconds. Honey, look, I've gotten tied up. There's something come up. I'm going to be late getting out of here. Could you delay supper till about 7? I'll be there in time for that. Sure. No problem. What does that say to her? You're thinking, next to God Himself, she's number one in your thoughts. You're thinking about her. What if you don't call and you show up at 7 o'clock? What does that say? Bad news, huh? Well, these are little things that come up in the everyday affairs of life that we communicate to her that, hey, we're thinking about you. Now, let me read you a negative illustration of this from Charlie Shedd's little book, Letters to Philip. I hope none of you guys identify with this. Charlie says, let me present one of the prize illustrations of why women cut their wrists and drown themselves in bathtubs. It's also why they leave notes that read, Dear John, I'm gone off with Herbert. Goodbye. Fortunately, that didn't happen here, but some women are made of pretty stern stuff. She was. She came into my study looking for all the world like she just dedicated her life to getting even. The reason she looked that way is she had just dedicated her life to getting even. She'd been in an automobile accident 5 days before. Now, some women go all to pieces at times like this. Others, bless their hearts, experience a sudden rush of good judgment. So, being one of the latter and a dutiful wife, as soon as she could, she phoned her husband. Now, what should a man do first if that happens? Sure. That's right. That's not what he did. Instead, he said, how much damage did it do to the car? Well, you know, you got to give him a little credit. It's practically a new Oldsmobile. Query number two was, whose fault was it? You know that we all sound unsure of ourselves part of the time, and particularly when our nerves are shattered. So since his answer suited him, he gave her explicit instructions. Obviously one of those guys who thinks of all the right angles except the right one. His third offering was this little gem. Listen, darling, don't admit one thing. You phone the insurance company, and I'll call a lawyer. You understand what I mean? She understood. Then, to show you that even an idiot can do some things right, he added, just a minute, I'll give the insurance man's number. Thank you so much, she said. Aren't there any more questions? No, he replied. I think about that. That about covers it. Oh, does it? She shouted. Well, just in case you're interested, I'm in the hospital with 5 broken ribs. Question. How can a man effectively say, I'm sorry, after he's told one like that? No way, really, not effectively. I mean, you can say it, but...
Wrong number.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're Mrs. Jones. I thought you were Mrs. Smith. Yeah, right. Yeah, right, yeah. Of course, I suppose in his behalf it should be noted that he knew the accident wasn't fatal. Dead wives do not make phone calls. Okay, one more. Just the opposite.